All right, welcome to Section 6. Why don't we begin with any questions you have off the bat, and then we'll dive right into the spec and code walkthrough. Okay, John.
I think it was pretty quick, and it seemed that it was doing the same thing, but I didn't catch the subtleties between the two, and that is a JSP and a server.
Sure.
Hello world. It seemed that one used Java code for the other.
So it's a good question. So the fundamental difference between JSPs and servlets, I would say that the biggest difference is in where they fit into a project or into a application. The JSPs are pretty much one step closer to the user, one step closer to HTML, because in effect they are HTML pages, but with JSP tags interlaced throughout them, as we saw with hello.jsp, and we'll see somewhat more with Project 4. In fact, if we can take a look at one sample. If we look in example 7s and go into our base directory, web apps, root, and look at happyenv.jsp, you see in this file a bit more code. Is it legible in back? Okay. So notice that for the most part, this is XHTML. We've got our XML declaration at the top. On line 3, we have a doc type. We've got a comment on line 5. And now we've got some JSP code. So specifically, I've got this first line of JSP code that says byte array output stream OS gets new byte array output stream. So that's just a Java trick of code. The next line, we declare a print writer. And then we instantiate a new print writer passing to it that output stream. Finally, we execute in the third line of JSP code here, we instantiate a new environment check object, which this, in fact, should look familiar from NICE, because that's the command you type to check your environment. Well, that was just an alias for a certain command, for a certain class. Essentially, all we're doing is instantiating one of the things you've been running at the command line and calling check environment, passing to it that print writer. And what that print writer simply is an object that allows the output of this command to get funneled out to what is, in a sense, standard output. At least that's one way of thinking of it. So notice now what happens. What we have below is just XHTML again. But there's one more line of JSP, which prints to standard output. Essentially, it's technically the response object is the out object, out reference here. But we print out that array of bytes that was generated by the check environment command. So this is simply to say, most of a JSP is often HTML, but interlaced through it is a bit of Java code, inline Java code, if you want to think of it that way, where you do something sort of quick and dirty to get access at some data dynamically and then output it into the same page. Yeah?
So where does the response object
come in? You get it for free. So out is like you get in Java code system.out for free. You never have to declare it. You don't have to import it. You just get it. So similarly, do you get out for free in a JSP. And it's standard output conceptually, but in reality it's really that HTTP servlet response object. So contrast this now with an actual servlet like those we looked at. And if we look for a moment real quick again at hello.jsp, again, it's almost all HTML with a bit of inline Java via the JSP tags. If we instead look at the webinf classes directory, and then hello.java, notice that this, though it's printing HTML, or XHTML, this is all Java code. This is a compilable class that you could compile at the command line. In fact, that's what I did to get it working. And the fact that it prints out XHTML is sort of just a side effect, when really, I could be printing out anything here. So servlets are much more business logic focused. They're much more focused on implementing logic rather than on implementing aesthetics like hello1.jsp. So think of the JSPs as being, again, one step closer to the user, whereas the servlets are more in the back end. And the means by which you get the data to the servlets was via what file? There was a way via which we mapped the URLs to... close... web.xml. Yeah. So So does that make a bit more... John, with practice, this will become more clear, I think. But that's essentially the distinction. JSPs are one step closer to actual HTML for our purposes and to the user. Yeah? So that's a really good question. So when to use JSPs versus servlets? So the answer depends, and there's a good meaty gray area where you could make an argument either way, but I would say that if you're doing, the more complicated the logic is, the more processing you need to do, the more appropriate a servlet probably is. The simpler the task is, the quicker and dirtier it is, the more appropriate it might be to, I knew him, if that was weird. The simpler the task is, the quicker and dirtier it is, the more separate you want to keep your content from your presentation. Sorry, conflated those. The simpler, the quicker, the dirtier the project is, the more appropriate JSPs might be. But the more you want to keep your content and presentation separate, the more servlets might be appropriate. Which you'll see too, and we'll do this ever so slightly more in...
I would think that it's the more you want to keep your logic separated
from logic. So from logic typically comes data. So you output some new data that you want to keep separate from your presentation. What you'll see in Project 4 is that we'll use a bit of what's called JSTL, Java Standard Template Library. And this is an add-on, essentially, to the J2EE stuff that allows you to implement customized tags for JSP so that you could implement a foo tag whose behavior is defined such that it allows you to iterate over the contents of a foo object, okay, for some definition of a foo object. And it's a little abstract, but you'll see in Project 4 how that's done. The point being that what's often common is to put as much of the logic and computation in the back end of a servlet and then pass it off to a JSP that simply uses customized tags to then take things one step further and to sort of unmarshal the objects you've created in the back-end servlet space to actual XHTML content. I mean, the fact of the matter is, JSPs are a dangerous thing if poorly used, because just like PHP code and even XSLT code, you can talk all day about keeping your content separate from your presentation, but at the end of the day, so often are entire applications written with just inlined PHP and HTML, and same goes here. So it depends, in short, but I mean, my principle has been the JSPs that we have used JSP very little in the course, and that's not so much a philosophical decision as it is a design decision, because a lot of what we're doing with the projects is more interesting back-end logic that doesn't really make sense to try to push this close to the presentation layer. And also, you'll see that the JSPs we do whip up are, you know, 5-line, 10-line, quick and dirty things where it's just easier to do it in JSP because you don't need to deal with config files and so forth. So as always, it depends.
Can you import classes into JSP, and if so, how do you do that?
Yes. I thought one of our examples did that, the importing of classes. Let me take a look. Did we do it with this? No. XML.jsp. Yes, thank you. It's a little different. Oh, I guess this works, yeah, because we're doing both. So this is using scriptlet tags, though, but the syntax is essentially the same. So this whole example, XML.jsp, is using that JSP colon approach of writing everything in XML. We saw one of these examples on the PowerPoint slides, but the idea is essentially that you do a literal import. What I could have done here too in happyend.jsp. So here I just wrote the whole path out. And what I could have done is simply import, for instance, that. And I don't need to keep closing these things, but it keeps things a little neater, especially when you have so few. That, I believe, should work as well. And so what I've done, for those of you who can't see what I've just done, is literally just write import java.io.byteArrayOutputStream semicolon in a JSP tag unto itself. And that should import it into the context of this JSP. Don't quote me on that, but I'm almost positive that's the way to do it. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Well, we'll test it later if we want. Yeah? Good question. Do these open bracket percent things need to be on each line? No. It just needs to be at the beginning and at the very end. But because this was, I like to move things around and cut lines, it was just easier here. Aesthetic decision. I mean, that's what you'll find too with JSPs, especially if you go this route for some of the project stuff, because you are given great design liberties to push as much stuff to JSP as you want. What you start to see in JSPs, which I think starts to get ugly, if nothing else, is you start seeing, you know, line 2, you might see line 3, you might see many, many lines of code all nested between these angled brackets, and it just starts to become much closer to Java code than it is to to HTML, so you start to cross a line, I think, at some point. Other questions? Overarching questions? Yeah. Yeah, Perl, the only way I've seen Perl usually is to do essentially something like this, where you can write all of your HTML all you want, but it's usually encapsulated between print tags. There might be modules that allow you to write it more inline, but I've not seen it. But most of the CGI stuff, the course's website is driven by stuff like that, which too gets messy very quickly when you start interlacing logic with HTML. So that's again why you'll see slightly in Project 4, JSTL allows you really just to put, it allows you to just keep one step truer to this notion of separating content from presentation. But even then, there's an intermingling, and it means when you want to overhaul your website, you do have to make a lot of changes. It's not as simple as changing, you know, one style sheet, as people like to think. Other overarching questions? Okay, well, let's do this. Let's skim through the spec, and I will simply rattle off what questions you have the requisite background for, even if you disagree, based on tonight's discussion alone. So I'm looking here at the Project 3 spec. Stop me if I start going too quickly. Number one, it was a gift, so you get your free point this time. Number two, you should do. Number three, you should do. And by do, I mean read. Number four, you should read, but not necessarily understand, because it's not until next week that we're going to introduce DTD. So Project 3 does make use of DTDs, and I think even if you haven't seen it before, it shouldn't get in the way of even starting the project. Just assume that, you infer from the sample XML we provide you with in the Project 3 distribution that this is what the stuff's going to look like. Next week, we'll formalize what it means to look like something in the form of DTD. So read four, but don't worry about it yet. Question five. Definitely read question five. It talks about the diagram that we introduced tonight in lecture. You'll get the juicier stuff. Number five actually is really where the spec tries to hold your hand by walking you through the code, which to some extent we can do here tonight as well verbally, but it's, I tried to write it in the appropriate way so that you're walking from the code in the correct logical order. Rather than just diving in, poking around, I would suggest following the schedule that the spec proposes in question five. Question six makes it a two-point problem set. Question 7, worth 40 points. So now you get to the juicy stuff. So question 7 essentially has a bunch of requirements, but in short, it asks you to, quote-unquote, implement the essence of the portal, the view servlet, which, once a user has authenticated, displays at least the user's favorite headlines and links to the corresponding articles. The design of the page is largely up to you. So again, just with Project 2, I responded to many listserv and email inquiries with, up to you, up to you, up to you. I mean, it's meant to be fun. Like, use your design discretion. And so long as you could, even in your own head, make an argument as to why your implementation is consistent with the spec, that's fine. It's meant to foster creativity. But you'll notice, incidentally, and the spec does walk you through this, that one of the files included in the Project 3 distribution, you shall see, is in is in web apps, root, XML, and in this directory is users.xml, which in effect is our database. Now you'll notice that just as I logged in as J Harvard tonight, associated with J Harvard is not only the password crimson, as you see here in users.xml, but also three categories. So hard-coded into the assignments distribution is a user who already has three subscriptions. This is to say you can implement the view servlet before implementing the pref servlet, because presumably when you log in as J Harvard, after you've implemented your view servlet, you're going to see John Harvard's three news categories and the headlines therefrom. So that's a way of bootstrapping things, and obviously you could manually edit this file before. Actually, we support user authentication, but you don't yet support customization of subscriptions, so you could just manually edit this file if you wanted to see more feeds, especially if you wanted to see how 20 feeds display. Where do these names like Boston News, Top Stories, Top Technology Stories come from? Well, the specification points you in the direction of a URL on Moreover's server that tells you what categories are available. So those aren't arbitrary. They're consistent with the available menu that Moreover provides. And in fact, in the project distribution itself, what I did, in case you wanted to work offline with it, is I cached a couple of the files that I refer you to in the spec, one of which is called nestedcategorylist.xml. Essentially, this is the menu of feeds that Moreover supports. And so what I did arbitrarily for John Harvard is pluck out three of these things and say, John Harvard's going to subscribe to those three. So you know already what they are, but realize, as we say in the spec, there will be opportunities to grab this information dynamically rather than grabbing it from the cache, which is really just for debugging and development purposes. What you'll also see in this cache directory is biotechnews.xml, which similarly is just a cached copy of one of the URLs I propose that you visit in the spec. So when Project 3 says that you will retrieve feeds from Moreover, what it literally means is you're going to fetch via HTTP XML files like this. This is a sample response you would get by requesting of Moreover the biotech news feed. It's an XML file with a whole bunch of article elements, whose structure should actually be self-explanatory, though the spec walks you through it, and next week the DTD will make even more clear its structure.
So then we're going to
have to parse that with the stuff on the page? Yep. You will have to parse it. Not hard, though. Not hard, especially when you have things like XSLT at your disposal now. You will not, incidentally, want to most likely use things like SAX and DOM at this point, because you have now at your disposal APIs like XSLT, and even XPath has a Java API that you can use to just query data out of an object. You might use a DOM parser to get a DOM back if it's a small enough feed to be reasonable, but you don't want to be writing your own DOM walker code anymore or your SAX event content handlers anymore. It's probably too low level. You'll be writing way more code than you need to at this point. Again, we're building on top of things in the course. So with that said, let's return to the spec and finish this off. So number 7, you should be able to do all of, starting tonight. Number 8, you should be able to do all of as well. So that's 80 points already after tonight, 82 points. And number 9, you could also theoretically do all of. Number 9, whereas number 7 is about the view servlet, number 8 is about the pref servlet, number 9 is about your own extension to Wahoo, which essentially charges you with do something else that's interesting with the portal. Integrate RSS feeds, integrate a podcast feed, rework some of the backend stuff. I list a whole bunch of possible options for this personal touch, as we call it, but essentially it's your opportunity to experiment and do whatever you wish with the portal that's entirely of your own design. Question 10, you get 2 more free points. That's good, 126, 124 points, and then submitting. So that's it. It's only 16 pages this time, only 11 questions. But certainly, I say that you're equipped to do pretty much all of it except things related to DTD, which in fact, I don't think we even ask you to do anything with the DTDs. We simply show you Moreover's news feeds in the context of DTDs. And I say you're equipped after tonight. Well, frankly, most of this project is about Java, and it's more about Java than it is about J2EE per se, because so much of the J2EE setup is given to you. Getting comfortable with that will come inherently, and it's not the sort of thing I think where you'll have to spend hours playing with Tomcat, looking at configuration files, because the fact of the matter is, it works out of the box. And so it's going to be through your own experimentation and playing that I think you'll start to realize, oh, if I wanted to implement something like this myself, here's how I do it. So with that said, let's see how we do it. And please interject with any questions. In build.xml, you really only have the basics for this project. You've got a compile target, which compiles the servlets. The JSPs are compiled just in time, so you don't manually compile JSPs. You've got a javadoc task to generate javadoc if you want to look at your docs, publish javadoc as well, and then clean. So pretty straightforward. Which is to say, when you run ant compile, or just ant, notice that the classes that get compiled are pretty much the little black boxes that we had in the slide tonight that depict Wahoo's structure. You've got login.java, you've got news provider, prefs, user, user manager, view, and Wahoo servlet. So pretty much all the things we discussed, with the exception of this guy, which is an abstract class from which the actual servlets implement or extend. So let's take a look at what's in here. Server.xml is the first place you start, as the spec tells you, and you pretty much choose your ports. The other thing that's relevant in server.xml, but just to notice, not to have to change, is the bottom stuff, like tonight's lecture demo. In the host element, notice that I've said that the base directory for applications is going to be web apps. Okay, that's the convention. Tried to stick with pretty much Java conventions. The rest of this stuff is interesting to think about or look up, but not so relevant to the project. Here now...
Hey, David, just trying to follow you so I can write some notes. What page are you?
I am in conf/server.xml. And again, I'm going quickly only so as to acquaint you with these details, but these aren't details you need to yourself change, realize, except that port number, which is well documented in the spec. So just as with our lecture demo tonight, in the web apps directory, we have a root, which I say is going to be the root for all the documents referenced by this project. And this last line, just know, is the way by which you disable persistent sessions so that cookies are not saved to disk, but instead are left only in memory. Otherwise, you get problems when you quit Tomcat and reload it if you have persistency. Rather, it makes sessions persistent, not cookies. So the session objects would otherwise get stored to Tomcat's work directory, which you probably don't want. Rather, it would allow you to shut down your server while people are using your site and then bring it back up without state having been lost. During development, that's bad, though, because if you change the definition of your shopping cart or of your subscription feeds, then you have old data lying around. So it's easiest just to kill persistency for us.
Which one killed it? Oh.
This line here.
The manager pathway?
No, this guy, right? Yep. Just that line there. Sort of a... But this is all done for you, again. You'll find, unfortunately, that Tomcat, though quite popular and quite well implemented, is quite poorly documented, frankly. There's a lot of documentation on the website, but so much of it is documentation via example. Rather than looking up, how do I do this, you sort of have to look through the configuration files and infer from the names of the verbose attributes and elements or from the comments, like... This is my comment, actually, but these things are from the original files.
But we're never going to have to change anything.
Nope. The spec will tell you if and when you need to change things, but the point here is to really familiarize you with the framework, because after a course like this, the goal is not so that you know how to implement a portal and how to implement an e-commerce site, but rather how you know how to implement a J2EE application. And the reason that the spec, for instance, has you downloading every darn piece of software that you need and configuring it and installing it on your own machine is so that we don't just hand you one big zip file that does everything for you, because if you then at the end of the class want to do this yourself, like, you probably don't have someone who's going to tar everything up for you, hand it to you, and say, go deploy this. So there is a reason for making everyone jump through the hoops of the 20-some-odd footnotes to set things up themselves. That's how you'll have to do it afterward, especially as new versions of things come out. The other files in the conf directory are really not so relevant for now. The only one that's got some juicy stuff in it is web.xml, but most of that is defaults, and we'll only look for now at the per application web.xml file, which again overrides or extends some of those definitions. So relevant next is really only two directories, the source directory and the web apps directory. And this hierarchy is a little cleaner than the lecture demo because we didn't have a source directory in the lecture demo. We dropped all the class files, the .class and the .java files, in the classes directory. That was just to keep things simple and not have to deal with a build file. I wanted to be able to build everything at the command line. But for the project where we want to automate things and make it very flexible, you have a source directory, and in there, as you might guess, are all the buzzwords that you've seen on the picture, the diagram for Wahoo. Let's come back to this in a moment, because the code is the media stuff, but let's just go back to configuration in web apps, which just has a root directory, inside of which there's a bunch of stuff, but most of this is just silliness, like aesthetics and images and so forth, stuff you would expect. So docs is where your Java docs are going to end up. DTD is where a DTD for Moreover stuff ends up. Happy Env is that JSP from lecture that we put in the project distribution too, so you can check via the server that your configuration is as you expect, because that's important. Images is a bunch of fun, goofy things like the Wahoo logo. Index.jsp we will take a look at in a second. XML and XSL have, for instance, we already looked in this directory, users.xml, a dummy file, which you'll see in the spec why it's used, and then the cache. In the XSL directory, you'll see a few style sheets, and we're continuing to use XSL so as to continue some of the lessons of the past. What you'll find is that the means by which Wahoo's main page is generated is via an XSL transformation of XML. So we'll look at that in a moment as well when we look at the actual code as to what's going on. But just to round out the source or the web apps directory, I did promise this index.jsp file, and notice how simple this index file is. Recall that when I pulled up Wahoo in lecture, I just went to ice1.fas.harvard.edu:8080, enter. But recall when we looked at servlets before, the convention is to have them accessible via a URL, which is /servlet/login or /parameters or /visits. Well, it would be annoying if your user by default has to manually type in not only your host name and port, but also the full path to your default servlet. So all this index.jsp does is it's an HTTP redirect, and it sends them to the appropriate URL. Just makes things a little cleaner. It's a nice user-friendly feature. And finally, web INF, we have classes, which there's class files. You don't have to put them there. The ant build file dumps them there so that they are where Tomcat expects. But in web.xml, notice, is some juicy stuff. But pretty self-explanatory. So web.xml is a file that usually defines per application settings. And what we have in this one is a definition of three different servlets, one called login, one called view, one called prefs, and guess which classes they're mapped to. It's pretty straightforward. So all this is really telling Tomcat is when someone visits /servlet/view, what class should be invoked? Well, yeah, the CSEIE259.project3.wahoo.login. What is that? That's a servlet. And we'll see in a moment that it extends, if you can recall, what class? HTTP servlet. HTTP servlet. And that's it. That's what we'll implement. So that's it. I mean, that's pretty much what it takes to get a fairly simple J2EE application configured. Most of these config files, again, were default files that ship with Tomcat and would ship with any application server. I scaled them down and removed stuff that's sort of distracting and not germane to the project or necessary, and then just added the relatively few lines that actually are application specific. So the net result, recall, is if I run Tomcat in the appropriate directory, take note of what machine we're on, which is ICE2, which is why we keep it in the prompt. It's just useful to put it there. So I go to HTTP, ICE2, FAS, harvard.edu, 8080, enter, and notice where the URL goes, /servlet/login. That's just a useful thing. That's what index.jsp did. Now, when I log in, notice what happens. We'll look at the source. If we look at the source to this thing, okay, not authorized to look at the source to this thing. If we look at the source to... No, I do want to look at this, so I have to uninstall that program later. Okay. So we are going to save this just to my desktop, just so we can see real quick the HTML that's outputted. So the XHTML that's outputted for that main page is fairly straightforward, right? The pages can't get much simpler than that main page, but notice the interesting part is that the form is being submitted to /servlet/login, so back to the same servlet via post, which means the username and password are not going to show up in the URL, never mind the fact that we're not even encrypting the passwords and we're not using SSL, sort of uninteresting for our purposes. But notice, if you're unfamiliar with HTML forms, here's a pretty simple one. Declare the form, and you don't even have to give it a name necessarily, but sometimes it's useful to do so. We have two input types. There are only a few different input types you can use. If you haven't seen these before, look online at any XHTML tutorial like the W3C schools, or just look at get.html and get.post, post.html, which have all of the possible input types, except one or two that you might want to use. Certainly plenty for Wahoo. And you just specify, here's an input in this form, selected equals quote-unquote. Well, what does... Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know the question. Selected. Strange. That should not be there. So I will remove that. It won't break anything, but it shouldn't be there. Size equals 19. This just means how many characters should be visible within the text input field. Value is what's the default value for that field going to be. It's nothing in this case. What's the name of the variable? Username. What's the type? Text. So when it's of type text, that's when you get those input boxes. If you wanted a paragraph block, like one of those bigger input fields, that's called a text area. And again, look at post.html or get.html for the syntax. Here's another one. Notice it's of type password, and that is simply a text box, but whose character inputs end up as little bullets as opposed to live character. It's not really a huge security feature. It's still clear text behind the scenes. And then finally, an input type of submit and a value of login, which is what gets printed on the button. So in short, and I'm happy to chat further about HTML forms, but based on the few examples we've seen, it's relatively straightforward. But what's interesting is now looking at the back end, how things work. So if we look at login.java, which is in our source tree, notice we've got a bunch of imports at the top, which for now you probably need not ever change, certainly remove from those. Notice that the login servlet, as we promised, does extend HTTP servlet, but just because we have so much common functionality to these several servlets, what we chose to do is implement a servlet called Wahoo servlet and extend that. So let's just briefly look at Wahoo servlet. It's not that interesting, but it does have a shared structure. Notice that it's abstract, so you can't actually instantiate the thing, but it extends HTTP servlet, which means that you can have in this thing an init method, and an init method in a servlet is automatically called the first time the servlet is invoked, or even before. And that just happens for free. You get that for free. You never have to call init. That's what happens. So the only thing that our whole application needs to do, no matter what servlet is hit first, is we want to initialize the user manager. And the user manager, if you look at this code on your own, essentially loads users.xml into memory. That's essentially what it's doing. So this is just something we want to happen once when the project is first touched by a user. So we put it in the init method with that signature. If we scroll down to this next method, notice that doGet has the same signature from lecture tonight, and that you do have to copy-paste if you want to override the class that you're extending. Notice that doPost, similarly, is a one-liner, doWork. And this is just because, for convenience, Wahoo does not care if the information comes in via get or via post. Often, it's better to put things in via post so that you can fit more content, But for debugging purposes, it's useful for you, the developer, to be able to type things into the get string when experimenting. So it's just easier if we support both in the same way. So both methods just pass the response and request to this do work method. Do work, meanwhile, doesn't do anything. It's just a signature. So what this means is, by default, all get and post responses are going to be forwarded to a method called do work, which subclasses had better implement, because this is abstract. So this is just a factoring process of our Java code, so that everything is sort of nicely designed and you don't have copies of code lying around. Finally, a couple helper routines. Forward, which you'll see used in the code, which is a way of forwarding a request and a response to something else, namely to another URL. You'll see this used elsewhere in the code. And then there's the notion of a redirect, which doesn't retain the current request and response object. It bounces the user altogether to another URL, not passing along current information. And you'll see that potentially used in the code. And we put it here so that it's like a helper function if you want to use it. So back to login.java. Notice that it extends Wahoo Servlet, and it only implements do work. You don't need to now implement do post and do get, because the superclass does that for you, Wahoo Servlet. So it's a little messy because of the formatting, because of the font size here, but it's a short method. We first get the session, which essentially means, conceptually, give me all the variables that are specific to this user, if I put any in there before. What do I check? Well, if the session is not null, that means the user's been here before, so there's stuff inside the session, so I'm going to get out of the session the user's username. So this, again, is canonical code that shows you how to get an arbitrary variable out of the session. That is how you perform a lookup on this thing that's like a hash table. I'm getting back the username. I know it's there because the way this code is written is, if the session exists, there is a username in it. So it's an assumption I'm making based on my design. So if the username is found in this case, well, and actually I'm checking anyway, if the username is found, what I'm doing is logging the, let's see. What I'm doing in this case, if a username is found, that is, username is not null, I actually am going to kill the session. The idea being, the means by which you can log a user out, or the means by which a user is logged out, is if they visit the login servlet, the implication is that they want to re-log in, or it's somebody else who's pulling up the site, and so you just want to kill the old session. So what's happening here is that if the username is found, even though the user is visiting the login session, well, wait a minute, we must have old data there, and so invalidate the session, blow it away, and then go ahead and display the login form, which is a method we'll see down below, passing in it this information. Otherwise, notice what happens. If there was no session, this is the login servlet after all, if there was no session, what do we want to do? Well, we want to create a session for this new user. So we do the following. And here's where we're checking, too. One of the fields in that HTML form was something called submit. So even though the button that you click is of type submit, I also gave it a name so that I could refer to its presence or lack thereof. So if there was a parameter called submit, what I then want to do is check if what the operation was. So it's in submit, recall that I did this. Let's go to the HTML again. Submit is a button whose value is login, because there was also another submit button whose value is register. So I want to be able to distinguish between whether the user clicked the submit button to register or the user clicked the submit button to log in. And so I do that here by checking the following. If there was such a variable called submit passed in, and that operation equals login or the operation equals register, I want to do the following. I want to get the username from the HTTP request. So notice, this is not coming from the session. It's coming from the request object. So this essentially means get the value of whatever this field is. The username field of the HTML form. Then, if the username is null or equals empty the empty string, then there's a problem. Tell the user to actually provide a username. Well, what does this mean? Well, let's in the background have this thing running. Let's actually run this thing. Oops. The logins Java, CCA project Tomcat. So let's see what happens if I, like a doofus, forget to type anything. Well, if you forget to type anything, you get this informative message. The reason for that is because notice that if the username is null, you're going to display the login form, but with this default string, which if we scroll further, it says, please enter a username. Okay? And there it is. Next, if it's not null, then we're going to grab the user's password. How do you do that? Request.getParameter, whatever the variable is you want to fetch from the form, which in this case is password. If the password is null or equals this, again, the user screwed up, give them an informative message. Please enter a password. So in other words, if I type J Harvard but forget my password, please enter a password. So it's an error message to the user. Finally, if all of that went well, what we can do is this. So we've aborted in all other situations. So at this point, we do have a username and a password present. Well, if the operation that the user provided was login, well, we want to check that the user is null. We want to call the user manager's get user routine, which in a short, and you can look at the code on your own for this, if the username is in the database, returns to you what's called a user object, which is another Java class that we implemented. Very simple, but it's a class unto itself. And then what we check is if the user is null or the user's get password routine does not equal what that user's password should be, well, we got a problem. The user didn't input it right. So suppose I type J Harvard and then the password foo. Invalid username or password. Didn't match what was passed in. A user object, incidentally, terribly simple. Username, a password field. It's got a list, a linked list of news categories, which is the means by which those news feeds are associated with the user. And then notice you've got an add news category, get news category. So in short, a lot of the functionality from that diagram has been implemented for you. It's in the middle tier that you get to focus. The view servlet and the pref servlet, everything in the back end has been implemented for you. And the spec walks you through some of this extant code. So finally, if the user object did not exist, right? You pass in the username and password, but it did not exist, or rather register, sorry, if the operation wasn't login, but instead was register, well, what do we want to do? Well, we use this user manager routine and call add user with the current username and password. If something went wrong here, that just means there's an error. Maybe we're out of memory, unlikely, but could happen. And then finally, we call user manager.save to actually write out to the users.xml file these changes, because recall that the init method essentially loads the information from users.xml into RAM. These changes, by calling add user, changes RAM.save, writes it back out to disk, so that when you kill Tomcat, this user is still in existence. Yeah?
What if the user already existed, but they click register after?
So if the user already clicked register, so if we do J Harvard with Crimson and click register, you get an error. Unable to add user J Harvard. Please try a different username. Missing a space, though. Good question. So there's a lot here, and realize we've only looked at one of the servlets, but the point of this walkthrough, hopefully, is not so much that you realize, oh, this makes perfect sense right now, because it shouldn't. When you're looking at, you know, 10 different files, it probably shouldn't click immediately, but there's not too many concepts implemented here. So what you should be seeing in these files are very simple examples of how you do certain things, not even necessarily related to Wahoo, but related to what it means to get something from a session and what it means to get something from a request object, the parameters. Yeah?
Question again about why you can kill Tomcat and your object still exist.
So that line about persistency in server.xml was to say that if you kill Tomcat and restart it, you're logging the user out, in effect.
So when you kill Tomcat, you don't have access to those users.
Correct.
Until you restart it.
Correct. Yes. So your server's down, and it's like rebooting your server.
Okay.
Everything goes away except what you save to the user manager. But that should be... Yes.
Okay.
Which is itself persistent.
Right.
What you'll find, and we advise in the spec that you do need to call .save when you add new feeds to a user, or at least the code needs to be doing that, if not already, because otherwise you might make changes, might be working great, as soon as you kill Tomcat, everything goes away, which really isn't the point. So just so you see what Vue looks like, in Vue.java, again, it extends Wahoo servlet, it's going to override that default method, do work, but to do. Well, how to do it? Well, a lot of the framework is in place for you. And simply so that we can tie in some previous ideas, you have given to you some XSL files, vue.xsl and prefs.xsl, which is the recommended way of actually generating the pages that the user uses. Not necessarily because generating XHTML from XSL and XML makes the best sense in this case, but so that you can focus on the core ideas of J2EE now and on Tomcat, while borrowing some lessons that you're probably comfortable with already. And in Project 4, we'll try to forge ahead in a direction that takes somewhat better design approaches without overwhelming you with new material all around. You'll find that prefs.java, similarly, disappointing. Oops, oh, I lied. Prefs.java does have in... Let's see. In it... Yeah, there we go. So prefs.java do work remains to be done. But what we did implement for you in prefs.java is an init method, which again is called automatically the first time the pref servlet is invoked by anyone. And what it does is it grabs from the cached copy of the nested category list all of the available categories. So it's grabbing from the local system all of the possible categories, loading those into a string called categories.xml so that you have a chunk of XML to which you can apply prefs.xsl. So we do that for you because it just deals with a lot of the nuisance of loading with tricks like this, opening a local XML file, reading it into a string. Again, not necessarily the most scalable way, but allows you to keep your eye on the ball with respect to the project. Questions? Yeah?
About the things we need to implement that will be applying these XSLT transforms. I've been looking a little bit at this code. Is the way to do that similar to the way that you do it in login.java?
Very similar, yes. So you'll recall, and that's a good point to make, in login.java, we do ultimately make use of... Actually, we don't. We do here. Yes. So, and I think the spec walks you through this. We glossed over this earlier, but there was another method called display login form that was called a few times up above. What this does is it uses Xalin, or really it uses an it uses Trax, but the Java API for Trax, which is actually a redundant statement, but it uses this Java code to open up essentially a XSL file and applies that to an XML file down here by using, again, all of these stream source and open resource as a stream type methods. So what you have in login.java is a canonical example of applying an XSL file in the context of a servlet to a string of XML. And you'll find in the spec, too, I give you a little excerpt that tells you how you can apply, again, XSL to XML in the context of a servlet. But you have a working example here. Because these kinds of things are a nuisance to figure out, like getServletContext.getRealPath, it's a headache. And what you'll also find, too, is that because you're operating in a server environment in which you have this notion of a web apps directory and a root directory and an XSL directory, what the current working directory is conceptually unclear sometimes. So what you'll find atop the XSL files, which again are in the web apps directory, are a whole bunch of... Am I lying? Where did I put it? Let's see. I might be conflating this with Project 4. Yes, ignore me. Project 4 has profuse comments explaining how why things change in Project 4 with respect to the base directories. So for now, you'll see in login.java a canonical example of how to access the XML files that you want or the string that you want. The checking of the username and password is done in Java code. It is the displaying of this page that's done with XSLT. So this is generated by a Trax transformation of an XML string with login.xsl. And so that's code that you can borrow to similarly generate the subsequent pages like this. And in fact, the reason that this page is blank is because in view.xsl, that's all it does. And in fact, this doesn't even, actually, it doesn't even do this, because notice, otherwise we'd be seeing a logo. Recall that view.java, which is in our source tree, does nothing more than that. So it doesn't even get to the point of applying the XSL to any XML. And you'll find in particular, because we could spend hours, I think, walking through all of the code, but the spec is designed to walk you through this particular number 7 or 5, whatever it was, walks you through the code in a particular order. And you'll find that there's more to understanding this project. There's a bit more to understand about this project, but it's because it's designed to be representative of a typical web application that's running in a servlet container. So in sum, how many of you opt to develop on your own machines? Okay, so most of you and sort of. What you will find is that the spec in its footnotes also walks you through setting up on a Linux box or a Windows box. It works quite well. At home, I run it on my Windows box. In lecture, I run it on the NICE machines. So you will find that ultimately, once you have your class path and your paths configured correctly, running the server will be as simple as opening a command prompt on Windows. And I think I broke the code by doing something. Oh, it's already running. That's what it is. So the error we just got was address already in use. Well, that's because in the other window I'm already running Tomcat. And you make use of the console as well. You'll notice that for debugging reasons, I print stuff out via the equivalent of via system.out.println information here, which is useful because you can keep this window open while running your server to see what's going on. So I think you'll find it to be fun, because to be honest, at the end of the day, you will have a nice little functional portal with login. You can have people playing with it for you, and you also have this personal touch that makes it a bit more of your own. And we make some suggestions in the spec as to what you can do for that touch. So why don't we end here, and I'll stick around for any questions.